Living sheltered lives in our concrete homes, hearing the stories and beliefs of the tribes of those who live miles away from civilization, can make us frown or snort with amusement. Beliefs and spirits that guard the uncharted domains of this world, along with practices and rituals that need to take place to appease them, may seem outlandish and more of a fantasy constructed by idle minds. In the past, some even referred to such beliefs as savage and backwards. But for them, out there in the harsh domain of nature, it could mean the difference between life and death. The Katu people of the jungles of central Vietnam are a people group with ancient origins going all the way back to the era of the former kingdom of Champa 200 years ago. The meaning of the name Katu is translated as people of the headwaters, often attributed to their reliance on streams as sources for their cultivated crops. During the Vietnam War, the Katu were enlisted to the cause of the North Vietnam regime, which slowly eliminated their traditional and cultural practices and replaced them with modern developments and infrastructure in the name of integrating them with the majority Kin society. But beliefs rooted in centuries of oral traditions may prove hard to erase, beliefs that the Katu people continue to cling to because to them, it's second nature. They believe that everything around them, the trees, rivers, stones, creatures, are inhabited by spirits. And these spirits either bring about prosperity and security or bring about destruction and, worst of all, death.
Welcome to Curious Tales, a podcast where we explore unexplained and strange stories in the region of Southeast Asia.
Before the days of modernism and industry, the Katu people lived in obscurity, hunting and farming in the highlands. Their notion that the spirit world is as real as the one we are in now can be seen throughout their cultural practices and rituals. Every occurrence and event they encounter is attributed to a spirit's attempts of either communicating, warning, or hurting them because of something they had done. If a tribe member gets a fever while clearing a field in the forest, this would mean that the illness was induced by a spirit, or abikrung, and the person in question would have to seek assistance from a traditional healer or shaman in the village. Some Katu villagers have even stated that these spirits live similar lives as they do. They live in villages, tend to crops, and even have social lives. Ating Chon of the Arik village recounted a dream that he had after passing through a section of the forest that was unknown to him. The dream began with Ating standing in the middle of a strange village he had not seen before. In the distance, he spotted a guol or communal house, and a number of other houses on stilts that looked like regular ones built by the Katu. He began to notice figures and shapes around him, and realized they were slightly odd-looking. Identifying them to be the spirits of the forest, he started to observe them. Telling the story later, he mentioned that the spirits work in the same way as humans do, and understood why they would be displeased if the villagers were to occupy the same area as them. This intimate connection between forest spirits and human beings acts as a guiding principle in knowing what to do and what not to do. In other words, their survival depends on it. Death is at the center of the Katu belief. It prowls the forest. It lurks in the darkness, striking without warning. But death isn't the end of the road. According to the Katu, the souls of people who have died strange and horrific deaths remain in the forest, craving for the taste of blood. This concept is not unlike the vampire in Western mythology, with their need to slay living people to be satisfied. In trying to appease these spirits' lust for death, the Katu would often carry out a practice that has long since been banned and swept under the rug. The practice of blood hunting. After talking, drinking, and singing through the night, the blood hunting party of the Bolo village prepared themselves to leave at dawn. They sharpened their spear blades and readied their crossbows with poison bolts, a specially crafted concoction made from the sap of a strychnos tree. Draping blue cloaks on their shoulders, they march out of the village and into the thicket for hours on end, sometimes for days. The blood hunters avoid the common paths, hacking their way through the jungle and uneven terrain. Reaching a path near another village, they plan and lay an ambush for the unsuspecting victim who would be unlucky enough to walk by. Night falls quickly, and soon someone comes along the path towards them. A whistling sound carries through the air, and immediately, the unwitting victim falls to the ground, paralyzed. The poison bolt had worked. With quick and sure-footed movements, the man brandished their razor-sharp spears, and one by one, they thrust them into the felled man's body. Blood flows profusely, and was soon soaking the ground under the stars of the night sky. The spirits, it seemed, were satisfied. In the village of Apat Bling, the level of anticipation was rising. The villagers were caught in a war with a number of other villages, and their blood hunters were not letting up. The conflict raged on back and forth, each village attacking another, as more and more people died. Blood hunters began to attack outright in broad daylight, as opposed to night raids, which they preferred. The reason for these bloody attacks was exactly that: blood. The village shaman or spirit medium would receive a message from the spirit or ghost inhabiting the area, saying that it craved for blood. The villagers were not allowed to offer human sacrifices from their own village, so they were left with the only option of killing those in neighboring villages or anyone else outside their territory. Usually after the killings, the hunters would begin filling containers with the blood of the dead, with the bodies left untouched. But some hunters would sever the heads of their victims and carry them off as well. Each successful attack was followed up with a big ritual to celebrate their victory. During this ritual, the blood they had collected from the people they killed would be offered to the spirit of the village, the Aboy Buo. Gongs would sound, and the villagers would rhythmically beat their drums, prolonging the ritual celebration for a number of days. It was believed that following the offering of blood, the village of Apat Bling would experience a rise in prosperity, having plenty to harvest and eat. Refusing to hunt for blood would put the village at risk of death by disease or being killed by those from other villages. I guess that you could say that this brings a whole new level to the phrase, blood for blood. Even when the culture of blood hunting faded before the world welcomed the new millennium, the spiritual aspects of Katu life remained very much alive. In 2011, Elder Jerang was asked by an anthropologist, Nicolas Aram, about his reasons for abandoning his settlement for a more remote location. He just mentioned that there was not enough land to plant his crops. A strange statement, considering there hadn't been any concerns over land shortages in the area at all. The reason, it seemed, was a more supernatural one. Elder Jerang had set about clearing the land around a small spring in 2009, so he could convert the area into a wet rice field and edible garden. He happened upon two old fig trees, which he decided to cut down to continue clearing the way. He set to work peeling the bark from the base of the trees, with the intention of allowing them to wither and die to make them easier to cut down. About a year later, Jerang returned to check on the trees. One was still alive with its leaves still green, while the other had withered up just like he intended. Since it would require less work, he proceeded to cut down the dead tree and choosing to deal with the live one another day. He had little idea that the small act of killing that tree would cause a ripple effect for the terrible events that followed. That night, he slipped into an ominous dream where two entities approached him. One of the entities resembled his late father, while the other was elderly and had a pale complexion. The one that looked like his father spoke up, talking about the two fig trees he was trying to be rid of. If he were to kill both the trees, that same fate would befall his family. Jerang awoke, startled, and a little distressed over his dream. Customarily, the Katu take their dreams very seriously, often obeying and complying with whatever messages they receive through them. However, wanting to ignore his superstitions, Elder Jerang shrugged his dream aside. But he would live to regret his actions, as a short while later, his wife suddenly died. She had been a strong and healthy woman in her 50s, with no signs of physical problems. Jurang was crushed. Before they buried her, Jurang's younger sister went into a trance, seemingly possessed by a spirit. She repeated these words to him: "The village has to move. It cannot stay in this place." Surprisingly, this was not news to Jurang. His grandfather and his father both knew the place was inhabited by strong spiritual forces and warned him to move. But he ignored their advice, because who would base their living arrangements solely on the supernatural? Now it was time for him to take their words seriously. He first made an effort to appease the angered spirits by offering several sacrifices of village livestock. He even planted a tree in the place of the one he had cut down, but nothing seemed to work. In 2011, another elder in the village, Ating Avi, died. He was the oldest man in the village, but his death was not as swift as Jurang's wife. It was a slow and painful ordeal, lasting several weeks, where Avi would slide more and more into a paralytic state. At the moment of Avi's death, Jurang was struck with a powerful seizure and saw it as his final warning. He and the entire village packed their things and went on their way, leaving behind the spirits that had caused so much mayhem to their community in the peace they so craved. It is a confusing time to live in Southeast Asia. We struggle between the superstitions of the past, which were passed down to us from generations before, and the modern world, which chooses to ignore that aspect of our cultural beliefs. Logically, it seems like foolishness to allow things we cannot see dictate the way we live our lives. But what happens when it appears that these forces have a say in human life, more than we care to admit? It's a balancing act that will go on for a long time, as long as the society continues to evolve and grow. Because sometimes, belief becomes our reality.
Thank you for listening to Curious Tales. This episode was researched and made by Ian Quack. If you would like to suggest peculiar and strange stories you might know within Southeast Asia, whether historical or present day, you can get in touch via Facebook or Instagram at The Curious Tales. Please subscribe to this podcast to continue to enjoy new stories. And we'll see you next time, as always, for another Curious Tale.